I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, we are going to talk more about that very sad case out of New Jersey. A former Rutgers University student was convicted on Friday of a hate crime after he used a webcam to spy briefly on Tyler Clementi, his freshman roommate, while Clementi had an intimate encounter with another man. Days later, Clementi took his own life. We decided to hone in on some of the legal issues raised by this case and this verdict in a few minutes. But first, we want to talk more about the race for the White House. The contest moves to Illinois tomorrow after Mitt Romney scored a blowout win and more delegates on Sunday in Puerto Rico. In his victory speech, Romney argued that his Puerto Rico win proves that he can win over Latino voters in his bid to challenge President Obama in the fall.
See there that conservative principles and Latino voters go together, and that Hispanic voters are going to vote for Republicans if we stand for something, conservative principles that bring growth and good jobs and rising home values. That's why we're going to win. We're going to get Latino voters to help us out.
Romney's rival, former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum, is campaigning hard for Illinois, too. That's not the only big-ticket contest in the state on Tuesday. Jesse Jackson Jr. is fighting to keep his seat in Congress in a primary battle, and Tea Party activists are taking on some top Republicans in Washington. Of course, we wanted to talk about all this, so we've called upon two veteran journalists. Laura Washington is a columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times, and Nia Malika Henderson is a national political reporter for the Washington Post. Welcome back to you both. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Great to be here.
So, Nia Malika, before we turn to Illinois, we want to take a quick look back at the Puerto Rico primary. Mitt Romney trounced the field there. His rival Rick Santorum got some heat for saying he wouldn't support Puerto Rican statehood until English was the main language on the island. He also seemed to be a little confused about what the law requires there. But, Nia Malika, I wanted to ask, and I know a lot of people are bored with this question, but we have to ask at this point that does Rick Santorum have a path to the nomination? He's got fewer than half of Mitt Romney's delegates at this point.
You know, the short answer is no, and they seem to know that at this point. They put out a memo last Monday, which essentially says that their plan isn't so much to gather the 1,144 delegates needed to go into Tampa with a clean win, but really to deny Romney that opportunity. Now, Santorum has got a wingman in Newt Gingrich who seems like he's going to stay in this thing and scoop some delegates up along the way. He also has a very, very slim chance at winning this whole thing. But I think Santorum, by going to Puerto Rico, where a place where he had little chance of winning, he's essentially saying he's in this thing. He's not going to cede any ground at all to Romney. You see him pulling within the margin of error in Illinois in that race there, about 4 or 5 points difference in the recent polls. So we'll see what comes out of this week with the Illinois primary Tuesday and then on Saturday in Louisiana, where Santorum should do pretty good.
Okay, so Laura Washington, what are we seeing from the candidates in this final run-up to the vote? Who's making a good showing in Illinois? Worth noting that Ron Paul and Newt Gingrich didn't even campaign in Puerto Rico. So what's happening in Illinois?
Well, Gingrich and Paul did campaign briefly in Illinois last week, a couple of appearances here and there, but then they've moved on. But so the race is really Santorum and Romney. And Romney is spending, as usual, as he has done in every case, millions of dollars in ad buys to try to push back this challenge from Santorum. I think he's concerned. I think that he has been pointed out he is the front runner at this point, but he spent a lot of time in downstate Illinois this weekend. Downstate Illinois and central Illinois are traditionally much more conservative than the collar counties around Chicago. And Santorum has really made a real hardcore bid down there, particularly among evangelical voters and Catholic voters. Of course, he's a Catholic himself. Romney was concerned about that enough that he spent several stops over the weekend. So it's really neck and neck at this point. Santorum is at a slight disadvantage because he didn't file delegate slates in every single congressional district. So even if he were to pull out a win, he wouldn't get as many. He wouldn't get all of the 54 delegates that are in play.
The same thing that happened in Ohio. Wasn't able to capitalize even on the fact that he seemed to have some momentum there. So just briefly, Laura, what are you seeing there? Are you seeing sort of momentum one way or the other? Or is it kind of the same thing we've been seeing throughout, the two of them kind of grinding it out?
It's hard to tell. It would be an upset, certainly, if Santorum won, because this is a socially and economically moderate state, even among Republicans. But Santorum has surprised people before. There's so much more. What I'm saying is there's much more energy and excitement around Santorum's campaign. People who are supporting Romney are supporting him because they see him as being the best to beat Obama. They see him as being more the traditional choice. But Santorum definitely has momentum.
We're talking politics with Laura Washington of the Chicago Sun-Times and the Washington Post's Nia Malika Henderson. We're a day away from primary elections in Illinois. And now I want to wheel around and talk, Laura Washington, about an interesting race on the Democratic side of things. A change in district boundaries has led to Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. being challenged by former Democratic Congresswoman Debbie Halverson. And Jackson, of course, is the son of the famed civil rights leader Jesse Jackson. Size this up for us, Laura Washington. Is Debbie Halverson a contender? What's her argument about why she needs to replace Jesse Jackson? Very unusual for incumbents to have a strong challenge, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it's because incumbents, especially entrenched incumbents like Jackson, are very difficult to beat. Halverson saw Jackson as being vulnerable coming out of the long investigation, federal investigation of Rob Blagojevich, and the allegations that he did some horse trading with Jesse Jackson Jr. for Barack Obama's open Senate seat. Jackson Jr. has denied this through and through. He has said repeatedly that he will be vindicated. He has testified in Blagojevich's trial that he had no involvement in trading and offering campaign funds for the seat. But that investigation, as I said, has been ongoing. It seems to be dormant now. There's also a House Ethics Committee investigation that's still underway. Halverson saw that as making Jackson vulnerable. She lost her seat 2 years ago. She had been a one-term congresswoman, so she saw this as an opportunity. You're right. There has been redistricting. The district looks – his second congressional district looks a little different. It's less African-American, but still majority African-American. There are more southern suburbs in the district, and – in fact, she is now in his district, so she saw this as an opportunity.
And we do have to just ask about, does race play a role in this race from what you can – ethnicity, let's say, from what you can see? As you mentioned, it's a black majority district. The Jackson family, regarded highly, as certainly has long roots as, you know, activists, and Debbie Halverson is white. Do you have any sense of whether race is playing any role in how people are evaluating these two candidates?
No, race really refreshingly has not come up in this contest, although Halverson does understand that she has to appeal across racial boundaries because she doesn't have enough white and perhaps more conservative voters in the district to beat out Jackson. But they've both gone out and wooed African-American ministers, African-American churches. The difference is that Jackson not only has the incumbency and the perception that he's a winner, he also has almost every Democratic Party leader in the state lined up behind him.
You know, it's also, Nia Malika Henderson, it's interesting because redistricting has also created an interesting dynamic in another race, that the one Republican congressman in the Chicago area will probably lose, or may lose, because Democrats in Illinois were in charge of redistricting, and they drew a new map that puts incumbents Adam Kinzinger and Don Mazzullo in the same district. And that's interesting because Kinzinger was a Tea Party favorite when he won his first term in 2010. Who did he unseat? Debbie Halverson, who we were talking about. But now some of the Tea Party people have turned against him. And so, Nia Malika, I was interested in saying he's not conservative enough. And
right.
So are Republicans nationally looking at this and kind of trying to figure out, you know, how to play this? Just as it's, I wonder if it's kind of mirroring the larger battle in the primary race for the White House over
that's
what
exactly
conservatism
right.
means here.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. It's a litmus test over conservatism, what it means. Is it fiscal conservative? Is it social conservatism? Is it a little of both? And you saw this play out in some ways in Ohio, too, with Representative Kucinich and Representative Kaptur, both the victims of this redistricting. And, of course, Representative Kucinich, a stalwart liberal, went down to defeat in that race. And here in Chicago, you have this same, or Illinois, you have this same dynamic playing out, a real test and contest of what it means to be conservative. On the one hand, you've got Kinzinger, who opposed some budget proposals and some cuts, and then you have in Manzullo, a 67-year-old, he's been in Congress for quite a while, and so Kinzinger is basically arguing, here is Manzullo, who's been in that district for something like 20 years, and he hasn't done much, is Kinzinger's argument. And Kinzinger really trying to play up his bona fide Tea Party credentials and saying that he is still fresh blood here in this race, and somebody can bring that spirit to Washington.
You know, Laura Washington, it's interesting because Kinzinger has kind of made a splash. I mean, he's an Air Force, you know, veteran, a pilot. I mean, according to one report, when he first came to Congress, he's like the Tom Cruise of the Congress. And I wonder if any of that is helping him now, Laura Washington, or is it not?
I think it's helping him. He was perceived when he was elected 2 years ago as the darling of the Tea Party, but I think he's also seen by the traditional Republican wing of the party as a rising star because of his age, because he's got this war hero persona, and he's making the case that it's time for change in Washington. We need fresh blood. We need blood. The irony is that he's angered some of his Tea Party support because he has moved closer to the traditional party establishment. He has been working closely with John Boehner on some issues, and he's voted against some Tea Party interests is in Congress. So in some ways, he's sort of emerging out of the Tea Party mantle and trying to make a case for being a more broad-based, conservative but more broad-based political operator.
Okay, Laura, I'm putting you on the spot because you're a columnist. So how do you call that race?
That one is really close. That one is really, really close. Again, I think in this case, Kinzinger has the momentum.
He does. He does. All right. Well, something to watch. Laura Washington's a columnist with Chicago Sun-Times. She joined us from member station WBEZ in Chicago. Nia Malika Henderson is a national political reporter with The Washington Post. She joined us from the studios here, their studios here in Washington, D.C. Nia Malika, Laura Washington, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Take care.